Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH. Streaming on the KTTH smartphone app. Dow Constantine is trying to stop the city of Burien from sweeping a dangerous encampment, and the city doesn't appear to be taking it. That is what's trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
The King County General Counsel, who works directly for the King County Executive, Dow Constantine, wrote a stern letter to the city council and the city manager out in the city of Burien, telling them, hey, you better not sweep a homeless encampment that's been growing downtown, that's been plaguing downtown, causing problems for businesses, for residents, for the very homeless people who are suffering in this encampment. They used to live over in the encampment by City Hall. They were moved. They ended up taking the space of what is to be a dog park. And it's been causing a lot of problems that we've been detailing on the show. We've spoken to a business person, Charlotte, who lives nearby, spoke with Cairo 7 TV.
I've noticed that they're starting to sleep in the park again. The drug use is still, they're still doing it in the open. They're not held accountable for their actions. They do damage and nothing's done.
What? A group of homeless people breaking the law aren't being held accountable for their actions? Not in King County, not in Washington State. Oh, it's always in King County and always in Washington State. Got it. Now, the county claims that the city is not meeting its legal obligations because they have not, quote unquote, identified housing, the housing alternatives for the homeless individuals. This courtesy of a case decided by the Ninth Circuit out of Idaho, basically saying you can't just do a sweep. You have to do a sweep if and only if you have an alternative place for them to go. Now, in this case, I thought they had handed over the space to a nonprofit, which makes it now, I believe, private property. So they should just all be trespassed. But I'm not entirely sure the legal options they have given the specific circumstance on this particular piece of land and how they handled it, how they handed it over to this nonprofit. But I do know that the city of Burien is bringing up, I think, an incredibly valid point that highlights why we have to get rid of the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. They might not see it that way because they're basically saying, y'all are supposed to help us and you're not. And maybe that's an indication that they need the KCRHA. But they wrote in a statement that they gave to Cairo 7 TV, Burien has unsuccessfully sought services, shelter space, and housing from King County and its designated agent, KCRHA. King County's letter reflects a belief that Burien alone is responsible for the unhoused now in Burien with no duty, responsibility, or obligation on King County's part. That's exactly what they believe. And they only believe that because they don't want to sweep. Now, if they had alternatives that they can push them into, they would go ahead and help you. And then, of course, take the credit for the work that they're doing. But because they don't ever support sweeps, they will never support a city that is considering it. That is an ideological perspective from the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. I don't think the average person, regardless of their political beliefs, thinks that it's okay for an encampment to continue to grow, continue to be a nuisance, and the city sit back and say, yeah, we can't do anything. The county sit back, nah, we're not going to do anything until we can find them a house, a studio apartment with views of Lake Union, with views of beautiful, I was going to say beautiful, serene Burien, but I mean, you know, it's Burien.
Yeah.
I wanted to give them credit,
but then the point remains the same.
Yeah. I tried. I did try. I couldn't even make up something that would have been nice to look at in Burien. No offense to our friends in Burien. Am I wrong?
Well, I figured you were going to drop a with all due respect.
I mean, with all due respect to our friends over at Burien, they're right. that the King County Regional Homelessness Authority is basically saying, yeah, you're on your own. We're not interested in doing anything. And when that's the perspective of what's supposed to be a regional authority on homelessness, doesn't it make my point that we should be ending the King County Regional Homelessness Authority? The city of Burien and other cities put money into this budget. They put hundreds of millions of dollars into the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. And it seems to me that a lot of those dollars are like insanely going to salaries. We have a lot of those dollars going back into the city of Seattle, being spent on strategies that just aren't working. Homelessness has gotten worse under the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. We're not supposed to notice that. We're supposed to blame COVID. We're supposed to blame everything other than policies that say, we're going to enable this kind of behavior. We're not going to really get involved until we can get you a studio apartment. And while at the same time, you're not addressing any of the underlying issues that lead to homelessness to begin with, like drug addiction, mental health disparities, they're not doing anything. And so the problem only worsens. The problem only worsens. And we're at the point where I think the Burien City Council and the city manager and the mayor would be better off saying, okay, we're going to save the X amount of dollars that we're giving to the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, and we're going to spend it the way we wish. We're going to spend it how we want to. That we're not going to continue to put our faith in an authority that is driven by ideology and not by proven record, proven strategies and initiatives and ideas and programs that can bring these people inside. And they're never going to change that perspective because the King County Council and the King County Executive in Dow Constantine, they don't believe in sweeps either. They believe housing is a human right, which doesn't actually mean anything. So whoever's going to be the new leader of the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, because its current leader, Mark Doans, ends his tenure, I think, in 2.5-3 weeks, whoever they tap to take over will still forward the exact same ideological positions, and nothing will ever get better. That is the truth. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
Now, at the same time, we've got Moody's Analytics coming out and saying the Seattle area is seeing the average renter spend a quarter of their income to cover housing expenses. And it's kind of funny because that's less than the recommendation of not spending more than 30%, right? That's what we've been told. I don't know where that came from. I don't know why they chose 30%.
Isn't that like a Dave Ramsey thing or something?
It's not a Dave Ramsey. That is a long time, quote-unquote, rule of finances. You're going to want to spend no more than 30% of your income on housing. Okay, we're spending 25% in the Seattle area, and yet still people are complaining the rent is too high.
I mean, all this money that you're putting away for rent, it's going to be very hard to save up even for the down payment for a house here.
I'd love to know what that gentleman does for a living, because while it's certainly true that housing costs are high in Seattle, there's no doubt about that, but he makes it sound like it's impossible when the average Seattle, specifically Seattle, the average Seattle salary is, I believe, low six figures. It's like maybe just over $100,000 or maybe just under $100,000, because when Max moved here, he brought the average down. That's you
could
on you.
You could fix that.
I could, but I choose not to.
Yeah, I know.
Actually, I could. I'm going to give myself more money, and that'll raise everything. So
thanks.
You're very welcome. Thank you for the idea. I get that. Let's just say you make $100,000 or even $90,000. Not you, obviously. You're not going to. But let's just say the average, the person we're talking about makes $90,000 a year. Okay. So that at the end of the day with taxes, probably 70, 75 grand, somewhere in between there. That's plenty of money to save and put into a fund to purchase a home. It's going to take a long time if you want to work, if you want to live right in the middle of Seattle. Again, that's true, but it's not unobtainable. Now, in Tacoma, they say the tenants there spend one-fifth of their monthly earnings on rent, and yet they, too, are complaining about how expensive rent is. We did that story last week. The renter's bill of rights. So everyone, I think the takeaway is everyone's always going to complain about their rent. And there's nothing you can do that will stop people from complaining. Because even when they're paying lower than what is normally expected, you hear them complaining. Now, they look more at the numbers, and they try to make the point Moody's does. They try to make the point that since 1999, the rent, and now this is national, the rent for the average American has increased by 135%, which from 1999 to 2023 makes total sense, right? Because we're talking about big cities that have exploded and got even bigger, and we didn't really put up or keep up, I should say, with the housing demands in a lot of these places. So from 99 to 23, increased by 135%. But then they say earnings have only gone up roughly 77%. And I love that too. Only 77%. Number one, that's pretty significant. Number two, when you're looking at the earnings average across the board, so meaning from the janitor to the brain surgeon, what that entails, and you should keep in mind, there is still a bar that you can say this is acceptable or not, but there's also a ceiling where you're going to have to say to yourself, yeah, I'm not going to get higher than this. So for the most part, and again, we're talking about traditional jobs. Let's say a computer engineer. You make good money in Amazon, okay? Let's just say your ceiling is going to be $200,000. It's not going to go higher than that for the most part, unless you take on more responsibilities. So the lower end jobs, that goes up, right? So federal minimum wage, state minimum wage, city minimum wage, all that plays into effect here. And so let's say in 1999, whatever the minimum wage was there for Washington State, let's just say $10, just for the sake of argument, $10. Well, now it's at 15, and Seattle, it's 1951. So that's going to raise. But the people who are already top earners, they're not going to jump as high as folks who are making a lower amount. So it's not really a fair comparison to say 77%, only 77% compared with 135% rent increases. But you've got Pete Meierig. He is a realtor in Bellevue. He spoke with Cairo 7 TV. And he's saying, yeah, at the same time, also keep in mind, cost of living is increasing here 11%.
We need to find solutions, or else if we don't, we're going to end up in a situation like New York, where you're paying 50% to 60% of your income on rent.
Huh. He says property owners are feeling some pain. And I want you to pay attention to this, especially the renters who love, love, love to vote in property taxes thinking it's not going to impact them.
That trickles back down to the tenant who has to now absorb those costs because the landlords don't run a charity. You've got to ease as up. You've got to make it affordable for the landlords and even the current homeowners.
Yeah. That is so important. I hope people understand that. How many renters continuously vote for an increase in property taxes, do a new levy, and they never think that it's going to impact them because, well, I'm a renter. How would property taxes hurt me? How would property? Well, you live on property, right? That property is being taxed. You're not directly paying. They're not billing you as a renter, but they are billing your landlord. They're billing the property owner, which then pass on that expense to you. So I don't understand why that's confusing to people, and yet it feels like it is. It totally feels like it is. And it's the equivalent for me, outside of the taxing part, you know, someone who doesn't have kids who just willy-nilly votes for a school board position because they don't really care. I like this name, whatever. It's not like I got any kids. Well, you're hurting other people, which then ultimately hurts you because those idiot kids, being nice to them, we'll just call them, you know, challenge kids. They end up going into the real world and screwing everything else up. And that's that. I needed an out on that one. Like, and that's the bottom line. Nothing?
Yeah, I don't know. It wasn't quite in rhythm.
Push the button.
What's trending in the media?
Pramila Jayapal was humiliated when talking about the debt ceiling on CNN, and yet weirdly, she seems to be bragging about it because she posted the video in which I thought she was being humiliated. She posted it on her own Twitter feed, or at least the 23-year-old staff member that she berates in between tweets posted on her Twitter feed. She was on CNN looking at a poll about the debt ceiling and what should be done. Republicans are saying, we'll raise the debt ceiling, but not without any agreement to at least cut down on some spending. They're negotiating that behind the scenes. Democrats, up until this point, the progressives have all been on the same page. We're not doing any of that. We're not cutting a thing. Biden, for the last several months, has refused to negotiate anything, waited until the last minute, and decided to, okay, now we'll negotiate. He's sending mixed messages whether or not he wants to cut. If they're negotiating and both sides are saying, we're getting closer to an agreement, we still might be miles apart, but we're getting closer, well, that means they're negotiating on cuts, right? And Democrats on the far left, they don't like that. But when you ask the average person, and we've said this multiple times, and now we've got polls to back this up, the average person, if you say, should there be a debt ceiling increase in conjunction with spending cuts? Do you support it? And they all overwhelmingly do. And so Pramila Jayapal is presented that data point, and she responds with the worst possible take.
If you just say to people, should we cut spending? They will probably say yes. However, if you say, would you rather cut spending and reduce the deficit by cutting the tax breaks to the wealthiest corporations and wealthiest individuals, or would you like to cut your own health care, education, care for veterans, etc., I guarantee you that you would have even higher numbers that say, let's make sure that we're making the wealthy pay their fair share.
That's the other thing we've been saying to the Republicans.
That's
not what the poll says. This is the exact question that was asked of voters. What should Congress do on the debt ceiling? Raise only if spending cut? 60%. Mm-hmm. Raise no matter what? 24%. Not raise, let U.S. default? 15%. These are what they are saying to this critical question. Go ahead.
No, I understand. But Poppy, you can't take tax cuts out of spending. You know, tax cuts for the wealthiest are spending. Don't think that that isn't spending. When under Donald Trump.
Hold on. Let's start keeping a list now of the words that have been redefined. So we know we have equity. We know we have gender, specific genders. We know that has been redefined. Violence has been redefined. I'm serious. I want a list now because I find this just utterly fascinating, what's being done with the English language. Now she's arguing that taking away a tax from the quote unquote wealthy is spending. Or is cutting? Where exactly are we going with this? Let's try to figure this out.
But Poppy, you can't take tax cuts out of spending. Tax cuts for the wealthiest are spending.
So tax cuts are spending. Okay. Are we confused yet on how this relates specifically to the debt ceiling? Other than I know that she wants to tax the wealthy. But tax cuts are spending. I mean, I suppose the wealthy are using the money that they're saving from the tax cuts and spending it and helping to grow business, helping to put a salary in your bank account because they're investing in businesses, and that usually means growth. Not always, but usually. So that's spend. Okay. I mean, granted, she's not talking about that. Let's add spending. That's like two different definitions of spending in this.
Don't think that that isn't spending. When
it's
under
not.
Donald Trump,
yeah.
They added almost $2 trillion to the deficit because they gave tax cuts to the wealthiest.
That's such a disingenuous argument, because she would argue in that same breath. I have to imagine she would at least acknowledge that the economy was better during the Trump years, right? Just objectively, that is true. It's not subjective. It's objectively true. When you look just at the raw data, she'll, of course, try to spin it and say, well, it was good for the wealthy, but not for the poor, which is 100% false. The economy was better then. It was better then because of those cuts, those tax cuts, which, again, went back into the markets, the marketplace, the economy. It grew as a result. And when the job creators catch a break, almost always, though not always, but almost always, they put it back into the economy.
That is spending. And I think the American people understand that that's what needs to change, is we need to roll back those tax cuts, and we need to actually make sure that we are reducing the deficit by making the wealthiest pay their fair share, not by cutting working people's benefits.
You think the American people know that? You think the American people know her definition of spending? Tax cuts are now spending?
I don't think they know.
What are you spending the tax cuts on from the government perspective? You're getting less money in to spend. So how is it spending? Tell me how that is spending. If I have $5 and you take my $5, how am I spending $5? I'm not. You took it. It's no longer mine to spend.
Well, you don't have the $5 anymore, so you spent it.
No, you stole it. I took your $5 and you took it back. How about that?
Okay.
How am I spent? It doesn't make any sense. Oh, my God. 1-800-465-8770. The IRS continues to be aggressive. They're increasing the number of officers in Washington state, so don't try to take on the IRS yourself. Contact our local tax expert and advocate, Greg Nunn, at Nunn Better Tax Resolution. He will help. Speaking of Nunn Better Tax Resolution, every Thursday, of course, we post a Jason Rand Show video update on our Facebook page. This time, we take you through the absolutely absurd reparations plan here in Washington state and how they're going to go even further. That video is brought to you by your local tax expert, Greg Nunn, and Nunn Better Tax Resolution. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Before we get to some of the big national stories, I want to give you an update to a local story we've been paying attention to. Police have arrested Johnny Mixaboya. He was arrested yesterday. I'm assuming that I'm mispronouncing the last name, but, you know, there was a short foot chase. Cops were able to catch up to him, and they made the arrest for allegedly stealing 5 mail trucks, of which I think we've covered each and every one, stealing from mailboxes, including the master key. We brought you that story last week. A lot of this was done in South Seattle, though not all of it. Some of the stolen mail apparently included credit cards, which totally makes sense. And as a result, he allegedly racked up over $7,000 in debt. Now, the assistant U.S. attorney, Aline Vaught, says to Cairo 7, obviously, when you do something like this, you're going to impact a lot of people.
I think it was 98118 had to be shut down for a period of a week or so, impacting hundreds of individuals who rely on the mail system to receive their checks, their debit cards, and things like that.
Now, he's been allegedly involved in this for several months. Took them pretty much that long to track this guy down and make the arrest. U.S. Attorney for Western Washington, Nick Brown.
What is less common is to have a case like this where a vehicle was stolen and keys were used to access widespread mail banks.
Yeah, less common. We don't hear that all that often. I was a little bit shocked to learn that apparently when one of those community mailboxes is destroyed or vandalized, that the community has to pay for it and not the United States Postal Service, which is absolutely insane to me that that's the case. But the crazy world we live in, those are the rules. So now this guy faces life in prison, possibly the death penalty. It's very serious.
Wow, for mail theft?
Yeah, or
that's
maybe
crazy.
A couple months and probably time served, and he'll be released within 24 hours.
Nice.
The complaints filed against him are specifically mail theft and possession of stolen mail. U.S. Postal Inspector John Wiegand says the motive was financial, which I'm glad he clarified that, because I thought he was a used stamp collector, or maybe he had a fetish for like post-licked envelopes.
I think it's the fetish is for opening the letters, using the letter opener. I've heard people talk about that before.
Oh, that's great.
Calm down.
Oh,
calm down.
Great. You just get this feeling. It's like, never mind.
With mail theft, generally, it's a crime to commit some sort of financial crime. I would say people aren't looking for the card from grandma that says happy birthday.
Uh-huh.
They're looking for the card from grandma that says happy birthday and it has a check in it.
So they are, in fact, looking for the birthday card that says, happy birthday from grandma.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, if you were stealing mail, you would look for something like
listen
that, right?
Listen to how he said
this. I know.
Looking for the card from grandma that says happy birthday. They're looking for the card from grandma that says happy birthday and it has a check in it.
Okay, so they're looking for the card that says happy birthday.
Yeah, they want to steal written sentiment from your grandma.
First of all, when has grandma ever sent you a happy birthday card that doesn't include cash? Never. Maybe when they turn 99 and they literally forget to do it, but they think they're doing it. But other than that, have you ever, in the history of your childhood, anyone out there, and you can text at 1-800-465-8770, has an elderly relative ever sent you a card that does not include a gift? Now, maybe within the last few years, it could have changed to a gift card, but let's consider that to be cash because it's treated like cash.
I mean, I've gotten plenty of
never. No,
cards
you haven't. You're
didn't
lying.
Have
nope.
Gifts.
No, birthday cards.
Yeah,
you're lying.
But maybe
you're lying. You're a lying liar who lies.
It was accompanied by a present.
But that's the same thing.
Well, no, but you get the card separate.
Well, first of all, you just said accompanied. Is that, should we put that word on the list of redefined words?
I'll put that on the list.
Okay, so last night CBS News did something, and kudos to them, even though it feels weird giving kudos to news outlets for doing what they're supposed to do, but they covered Gary Shapley, who's the IRS whistleblower. He's the one who we brought to you a couple, 3 weeks ago, something like that. He's the one who came forward via his lawyer and said, hey, we are looking into the Hunter Biden, you know, potential scandal at the IRS level. And I have noticed that someone who is a career working, like just the worker bees behind the scenes who are handling things at the IRS, this is an investigation that has not been handled correctly. It is an investigation that has been manipulated. And he's seeking to get a whistleblower status so that he can explain in detail exactly what he says happened. For CBS News to spend even a second on this story should tell you how serious this actually is. Because this is undoubtedly damaging to the president. It's obviously damaging to Hunter Biden. And for the most part, the national news media has not really been covering any of these issues. They've been either completely ignoring them or giving them like 5 seconds of airtime. But in this case, they went 2 minutes and 14 seconds. They actually went a little bit longer than that, but they had a feature with this guy.
I took control of this particular investigation. I immediately saw it, you know, it was way outside the norm of what I've experienced in the past.
Gary Shapley is a supervisory special agent for the IRS, where he's worked for 14 years. In January 2020, he was assigned to what he calls a high-profile investigation.
Who's the subject of the investigation?
I can't confirm or deny the subject of this investigation.
Why not?
Because, you know, part of the tax secrecy laws don't allow it.
Shapley can't say it, but CBS News has learned the investigation was the probe of Hunter Biden by the Trump-appointed U.S. attorney in Delaware. Senior Biden administration officials have vowed to let it run its course without interference.
It's not restricted in his investigation in any way.
But CBS News has obtained this letter Shapley's lawyers sent to Congress Monday, alleging irregularities in DOJ's handling of the investigation. Shapley is seeking legal protections from Congress so he can share specifics of his allegations.
There was multiple steps that were slow walked at the direction of the Department of Justice.
Had you ever encountered that before?
I have not, no. These deviations from normal process, and each and every time it seemed to always benefit the subject.
Shapley says he decided to blow the whistle after a heated meeting last October with federal prosecutors.
It was my red line meeting. It just got to that point where that switch was turned on, and I just couldn't silence my conscience anymore.
And kudos for stepping up, because he knows what's about to happen. He knows what's going to happen to him. He's going to be relentlessly attacked by the Biden loyalists, including some in the media, but certainly politicians, because he's going to, and we assume he's going to get the whistleblower protection status. He's going to testify, and he's going to be attacked nonstop simply because he's saying something that hurts the president. Doesn't matter if it's true. It's just that it hurts the president, and that is one step too far for many Democrats. Not all, because not all Democrats want Joe Biden to run for re-election. They realize the vulnerability in that campaign, and so perhaps some of them will allow Shapley to get a little bit specific during their question and answer session. But for the most part, you're going to get the Dan Goldmans of the world pretending that this guy, because he happens to be a Republican, is just a crank. I imagine we're going to get we'll probably have the over under on the resurgence of calling someone an insurrectionist or a QAnon conspiracy theorist. One of those it will be leveled against this guy. But he decided to come forward anyway, knowing all of that. And that takes guts. Because there have been many instances in maybe your lives in which you see something that is wrong, but you don't say anything because you fear some of the consequences. Fear that I totally get. If this guy didn't come forward, I would understand why. I'd be disappointed, of course, but I would understand why. He doesn't want to deal with that. It's not his fault that other people are acting in an inappropriate way during the investigation.
Did you let prosecutors know you were unhappy?
I don't think I can answer that.
Hunter Biden has denied any wrongdoing.
Like civil servants.
The IRS agent told us he is a registered Republican. His whistleblowing is being assisted by an advocacy group with past ties to the GOP. But Shapley says this is not about politics.
Why do you want to navigate these waters?
Well, I don't want to do any of this. I took an oath of office, and when I saw the egregiousness of some of these things, it no longer became a choice for me. It's not something that I want to do. It's something that I feel like I have to do.
Again, he feels called to say something. He doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to be dragged into all of this. And yet that's exactly what he's being effectively forced to do. Meanwhile, you have the DNC chairman, Jamie Harrison. He was on MSNBC today. And this is all in the context of Ron DeSantis announcing he's running for president. It went swimmingly. I hear that it was just an efficient, quick campaign announcement that everyone was able to clearly understand and clearly hear. It was just great. One that should be replicated by every campaign in the future. Oh, poor guy. I feel bad for them. But they're going after him because they see him as a threat. He's someone who has a great track record. You can look at what he's done in Florida and say, I would love it if we could do that across the country. But you can't allow for that. And of course, because he's a Republican, you're not just going after him, but you're going to go after the party at large. We have the debt ceiling conversation that we just spoke about. Republicans are evil, of course, blah, 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 blah. And there's no nuance. There's no like caveat. I like to say I don't think all Democrats think like a fringe far to the left progressive Democrat. I like to make that comparison. There are radicals and there are then just your average Democrat, including in Congress, because I think it's wrong just to completely dismiss an entire group of people based on a political identity. We may disagree on politics and policy, but I think most people want what's best, except for the radicals. I think they have a very specific agenda. But to Jamie Harrison, all Republicans are radicals.
They're all bad. They're all extreme. And that's the thing. You look at all of the major issues that people really care about. You look at about abortion. They all believe in a national abortion ban.
So they don't all believe in a national abortion ban. Like, for example, that is a statement that is verifiably false. Nancy Mace, the Republican congresswoman, has come out how many times just within the last couple months saying a national abortion ban is a bad idea. So just off the top, now he mentions abortion because it polls well for Democrats. It's one of the few topics that polls well for Democrats. But he's just flat out lying. And no one over at Morning Joe, where this is occurring, said a thing to say, okay, whoa. Slow down. Slow your roll. It's not necessarily true. Here's a bunch of people who don't support that. No, they just let them continue. They'll interject at some point during a conversation to say, yeah, oh, I agree. They're all evil.
To some extent. Guns. Again, they side with the NRA over families and our kids.
Or, let's go with me for a moment. We side with the Second Amendment, not over anything. It's not an either or. You can support the Second Amendment and fight for the Second Amendment politically while also doing what we can to mitigate threats against children. You can do both. Now, to people like Jamie Harrison, you can't because the Second Amendment is evil, blah, 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 blah. And he wants to get rid of it.
We look at the banning of books. This is America, you know, and the Republican Party. I grew up under the Ronald Reagan Republican Party. Uh-huh. They surrounded themselves in the American flag. Well, part of America is freedom, the freedom to speak, the freedom of choice.
The freedom to work without being forced into getting a vaccine. The idea that books are being banned in Florida is so silly. It is remarkably silly. And Ron DeSantis on Twitter Spaces last night pointed that out.
Yeah, so the whole book ban thing is a hoax. There's not been a single book banned in the state of Florida. You can go buy or use whatever book you want. What we have done is empowered parents with the ability to review the curriculum, to know what books are being used in school, and then to ensure that those books match state standards and are age and developmentally appropriate. So, for example,
blah, 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 blah. Is pornography protected by the Constitution?
Yes,
it is. Are there whatever the new Playboy is? Because I know they went out of business. Whatever the new heterosexual pornography is that comes in book or magazine form, is that being taught in first grade schools?
It is not.
Is it available in a library?
It is not.
Did they just ban them?
They did not.
No, because it's still available. We're simply saying you don't get it within the school because it's inappropriate. Now, they don't seem to think that there's anything inappropriate about remarkably graphic material in front of first, second, third graders. That is the equivalent of that heterosexual magazine that we put out. Are there any anymore? Do they still do that or is that a bad
example? I think they still sell them at like 7-Eleven.
The ones with the airport. Black cover on top of the black plastic in front of it. How do you know that's the magazine you want if you don't know what's on the cover?
Well,
you're supposed to just browse? How does this work? 1-800-465-8770. Every single Thursday we post a video over at Facebook.com/Jason Rancho. It's brought to you by your local tax expert and advocate, Greg Nunn. And Nunn Better Tax Resolution this week, we take on reparations. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. Welcome back to The Jason Rancho. You're listening to a show in which the host might be taking a position that you don't expect him to take, to a degree, because there is a debate going on in the city of Redmond where the city council might end up getting a significant pay increase courtesy of the Redmond Salary Commission. They would be going from what they currently make at $19,000 a year to $115,000 a year. Chandrashkar Goka is a member of this commission, and he says this is 100% necessary.
Our own city council does not get the very basic things that they really deserve in this global city that is there. We cannot do that thing. And for that, I think, you know, this is the time where we step up.
This is the time where we step up. Now, I 100% agree that it is worth more than $19,000. It's very clearly not worth $115,000. That is absolutely insane. This is a part-time job. I would recommend you make it a full-time job if you think that there's full-time work. And then I would say $119,000 is, or $115,000 is probably around where it should be. Here's why. Because I think lawmakers in general should be making more than they do. in general. Doesn't mean I think they're all worth it. But when you don't pay enough, you're telling people who might be incredibly qualified that they probably shouldn't even try because they know they're not going to be able to live on whatever that low salary is. The sacrifices that you have to make when you're a part-time legislator, for example, you know, these people all have full-time jobs, but this gets in the way of their full-time job. They're sacrificing there. And for the full-time jobs at a city level, county level, wherever it happens to be, you want to be able to attract the best people. And just like in the private sector, where higher salaries attract a better candidate, the same thing is true here. Absolutely the same thing is true here. And so this idea that we shouldn't be considering more because, and I think that this is the general reaction from folks, certainly on the right, some on the left, the general reaction is they don't do a good enough job. They should not be getting a raise. Don't think about it in the terms of the current folks. Think about it in the terms of who this can bring into the mix. It is incredibly expensive to run a campaign. That means people who are wealthy have a higher chance of running. If all of a sudden you tell people, hey, we're also going to pay you a lot, well, maybe someone who's making 60 grand a year right now, who you would totally vote for, maybe they would step up. Maybe they would step up and run and spend a little bit more of their savings during their campaign because they know that they can make it up if they were to win the election. I just feel like we are paying in general, not in every city, not in every county, but I think we pay lawmakers too little. And then we complain about the people who go for those jobs, the people who don't need the money and just want the power. The activists who have grown up and now are wealthy, maybe they were already lucked into wealth, they're the ones in positions of power. And I think that that's wrong. With that said, again, $115,000, that's insane for a part-time job. Redmond resident Yelena spoke with Cairo 7 TV.
Maybe given the overall inflation, there might be some consideration for maybe a slight increase, but probably four times that you're stating is probably a little bit over generous.
That's six times more, but can we all at least agree that 19 grand or like that's absurd? That's absurdly low, regardless of who's on the city council. 19 grand for this kind of job is absurdly low. It is the equivalent of, let's say you're remodeling your kitchen, your bathroom, whatever it is. And you go out, you get three different estimates. You go to three different contractors, whatever it is. And two of them come in within $1,000 or so of each other. And it's not cheap, but it's also not quite expensive. It's you find that little sweet spot. And then you get the third estimate coming in at 90% lower than what the other two offered you. Now, smart people say, that's a scam. I'm not going to get great work out of this individual. 90%, that's insane. That's absolutely insane. It's just to lure me in, and I'm not going to get any of what I want, despite the excitement over potential cost savings. You look at the other two. Well, put it in reverse. In that we're paying certain people a certain amount of money, what kind of candidate do you get at $19,000 versus $35,000? Is it fair to say you might be getting a better candidate who's willing to work for $32,000 than someone who's willing to work for $19,000? Because someone who is incredibly accomplished and is very good at what it is they do, they value their time, they value what they have to offer, they might say $19,000 and not really worth it. But Jason, they're supposed to want to give back to the community. Yeah, but they also have to pay bills, right? They also have families that they have to support, or parents maybe that they're supporting. So it doesn't work as easily as I think people want it to. And I don't view this necessarily as a black and white issue. Again, I understand why folks don't want to give raises to politicians. I totally get that. But maybe if we paid a little bit more, we would get better candidates to begin with. And then we wouldn't be in a position where we are just disgusted at the mere notion of paying a politician more. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. I want you to weigh in on this because I am really curious. And maybe I'm wrong because in the past, I've certainly heard a disgust when discussing this specific issue. Maybe your minds have changed. 1-800-465-8770. You are listening to The Jason Rantz Show on AM 770 KTTH.